Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
An American in Pyongyang? This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We look at yesterday's headline-making decision by the New York Philharmonic to perform a concert in North Korea this February. A trio of experts will be joining us in a moment with some analysis, but joining us on the phone first is Zarin Mehta, the president and executive director of the New York Philharmonic. Zarin, nice to speak with you again.
How are you?
Very well, thanks. I understand you've been weighing this invitation from North Korea since August. What made you decide that this would actually be a good thing to do?
The first thing that happened was the State Department, who has been in very serious negotiations with North Korea on denuclearization, felt that this would be an extremely good gesture on the part of the United States and asked us if there was some way we could find to play in North Korea. And we started looking at the logistics of the matter and the finances, and recently we came to the conclusion we could put everything together and leave politics to the politicians, and we'd go and do a bang-up concert.
So the State Department was in this from the get-go?
Oh, absolutely. We wouldn't have lifted a finger without their total support.
Okay. Was the actual invitation from Kim Jong-il's government, or was it through the U.S. State Department?
No, it came from the Ministry of Culture through their only representative in the United States, which is the mission at the United Nations. Mm-hmm. So the ambassador came to see us with an invitation, which resulted in our visit to Pyongyang to see if everything could be worked out.
So you'll be bringing the George Gershwin piece we were just hearing, An American in Paris.
Right.
And Dvorak's New World Symphony.
Yes.
Which somehow seems appropriate. There must have been a lot of thought given to the actual repertoire that you'd be doing.
Yeah, the thought was, you know, Lauren and I sitting down for hours talking about various programs.
That's Lauren Mizell, of course.
Yeah. Yes. And we came upon these two items. The concert will start with the two anthems of the two countries, an overture that is to be determined, probably the Wagner Lohengrin Prelude, the New World Symphony in American Paris, and two or three encores.
And the government of North Korea is aware of this program? I mean, what happens if you get on the ground there and, as has happened in the past with similar things, the government says, we would rather you didn't play that piece. Would you play this?
No. Their whole approach to us has been, this is your concert. We're delighted you're coming. Tell us what you would like us to do and tell us what you want to do, and everything is fine.
Okay. Now, what about the orchestra itself, the musicians? Were they polled on this? There are certainly some concerns about, you know, people saying, why are we going and providing legitimacy to one of the world's most repressive regimes?
Well, the musicians didn't have any concerns that I didn't have personally. Mm-hmm. We all debated and discussed this. And about a month after we started the discussions seriously about the visit, Ambassador Hill, who's, you know, the negotiator for the U.S., and I had a meeting with the whole orchestra in Avery Fisher Hall. And we went over all the reasons to go. And the basic thing was that if we don't engage in dialogue with regimes of this kind, nothing will ever change. And that the dialogue has resulted in the start of denuclearization. And they feel that by the time we go there in February, the thaw will have continued even further, and they expect the concert to have good consequences. So the fact that we might be helping in this regard is wonderful. Our objective is to make music when we are there.
We're speaking with Zarin Mehta, the president and executive director of the New York Philharmonic. They'll be playing in Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea, on February 26th. You're hoping for, you know, good consequences. I mean, realistically, what would you hope those consequences of your visit would be?
Well, that eventually the behavior of the government towards the North Korean government to the rest of the world becomes more open, that sanctions are lifted, that they are decertified as a nuclear, as a terrorist state, and normalization starts to take place with us and with other countries. When and if it becomes a different kind of regime is anybody's guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that doesn't mean to say that they have to stay, become democratic as we know it. China's not a democracy, Vietnam's not a democracy, but we have very good relations with those countries. And that's what I would hope would happen.
But certainly not as a result of a single concert by a single orchestra.
No, of course not. It's an example.
Right. Now, you're also performing in South Korea. What has the response been in that part of the peninsula?
Well, they're thrilled. From the people I've spoken to and the press I've seen, they're thrilled at the idea that we are going to North Korea. They're thrilled at the idea that we will come and do a companion concert 2 days later.
And in fact, there's a Korean airline and the National Broadcasting Company of Korea also involved in this,
right,
aren't they?
To make this all possible. The biggest problem we faced logistically was how to travel with 150 people to North Korea from Beijing, where we end our Asian tour, and to take all our equipment and cargo. And we're thrilled that Asiana Airlines provided us with a charter plane, 747.
For all the musicians and, of course, the instruments.
Right. And the wardrobes.
Mm-hmm. And there will be a pool of journalists, I'm sure, accompanying the orchestra for what will be yet another historic occasion in the orchestra's long and storied career.
That is correct.
The history of orchestras as a kind of element in world diplomacy is a surprisingly old one. I mean, the New York Philharmonic went to the Soviet Union at the height of the Cold War in 1959.
Right.
Do you look at those things like that, the Philadelphia Orchestra going to communist China, the New York Phil in Moscow, do you look to those events for any kind of lesson, any kind of preparation for what you're doing in February?
Look, we don't seek out these opportunities. They come only because civilized people consider this to be the best gesture that you can make from one peoples to another. It's not only in those places. I remember reading about Lenny and this orchestra going to Chile in the 60s or 70s, 60s I think it was, and there'd been anti-American riots before that. But when the orchestra played, people were throwing flowers in the air. I mean, it's extremely important to know that there's another side to any country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we proved, the Philadelphia Orchestra proved, etc.
And are you hoping to actually have access, or that, I was going to ask if you were hoping to have access to the regular people of North Korea. I guess the better question would be, are you hoping that, you know, rank-and-file North Koreans will actually have access to you while you're there?
Well, we've said that they should have their students and their orchestra members come to the rehearsals to meet with our people. We should have master classes. If we can arrange it, Lauren has agreed to do a rehearsal with their orchestra on the Wednesday morning. I'm not sure how. I mean, we'll all be in hotels and buses, and there's not that much time, so I assume we'll have freedom of access to people that are around us. I certainly had it when I was there.
And so you've already gone on a kind of a fact-finding mission.
Yes, I was there for 5 days. There were seven of us that were there.
All right. Well, Zarin, this is obviously, big news. And the New York Philharmonic doing this concert in Pyongyang, North Korea, on February 26th. They'll include the music we're hearing in the background from Dvorak's New World Symphony. Zarin Mehta is the president and executive director of the New York Phil. Zarin, thanks very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much.
And we'd like to hear what you think of the New York Philharmonic's plans to visit North Korea in February. You can leave a comment on the Soundcheck page of our website, wnyc.org. In a moment, we'll ask a former Pentagon official, a musician, and a conductor about their thoughts on the New York Phil's upcoming visit to North Korea. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The New York Philharmonic's decision to perform in North Korea has received rave reviews from some scholars and Korean-Americans who say the concert will promote openness with the reclusive communist regime. Others, however, are more skeptical and feel that the orchestra will only provide legitimacy to a cruel and repressive regime. In a moment, we'll hear from a musician who, back in 1973, traveled with the Philadelphia Orchestra to Communist China. But with us first are William Edens. He's music director of the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra and author of the orchestra blog Sticks and Drones, and Chuck Downs, a former Pentagon expert on North Korea and a board member of the U.S. Committee for Human Rights in North Korea. Chuck, let me begin with you. Back in October, when word of the invitation was out, but not of the New York Phil's decision, you co-wrote a New York Times op-ed piece saying that a visit would be handing Kim Jong-il a propaganda coup. Do you still feel that way? And if so, why?
Well, we have to guard against that. And let me say that Mr. Mehta's comments show that he and the Philharmonic are very interested in guarding against that. And they represent a crown jewel of American civilization, and I'm very respectful of how they're approaching it. The State Department, however, and Ambassador Hill are portraying this as something that it's not. They're saying that this indicates North Korea is coming out of its shell, and it cannot be seen in that way. Substitute the word Burma for North Korea, and no one would think that the New York Philharmonic should go to visit Burma. North Korea has a human rights record that is every bit as bad as Burma's, maybe even worse in many ways. And yet everyone understands that you don't do something like this as a gift to the regime in Burma. And North Korea says that the reason that we are doing it as a gift to them is because they have developed nuclear weapons. We are feeding right into their own internal propaganda.
So I'd actually like to take you up on what you said a moment ago. Let's substitute the word Burma for North Korea. I mean, we are in that case, we would be talking about another extremely closeted, repressive regime with very few kind of avenues of open communication to the West. If a major orchestra could be one of those, one of those lines of communication, why not?
In Burma, you actually could have a foreign orchestra go, and you can have people in Burma listening to the CDs, including the CDs of some of the musicians you're going to have on later today. In North Korea, however, you'll be sent to prison if you are overheard singing a South Korean song. There was a state security person, Ji Hae-nim, who was actually sent to prison for singing a South Korean song during a Christmas party. A holiday party. There are 200,000 people in the prison camps. 13,000 people die there every year. North Korea's human rights record has to be brought to mind and kept in mind when this kind of gift is given to the regime.
All right, we're speaking with Chuck Downs and also with William Edens, the conductor and music director of the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra. Bill, do you believe the visit by the New York Phil is a good idea?
You know, I do believe it's that it is going to be a good idea. This is a unique opportunity for the North Korean people and, of course, the South Korean people as well. There has been a lot of propaganda from both sides concerning what goes on in North Korea. And I'm not here to be an apologist for North Korea by any stretch of the imagination. But from everything that we know, the people of the West, or people who are not even part of North Korea, have been demonized, have been made out to be just almost non-human by the propaganda machine of North Korea. And what is going to happen is that if these people are given the opportunity to see this amazing orchestra play music, this incredible music, the Dvorak and Gershwin, what they are going to see is they are going to see their fellow human beings making beautiful music. And it is...
Bill, that is the key question, isn't it? If people are given the opportunity to see the orchestra. I mean, realistically, how many, you know, North Koreans, other than, you know, government functionaries, are going to have a chance to attend this concert?
Yes, I'm not sure about that at all. From what I have heard, and maybe it is incorrect, but from what I have heard is that this concert is supposed to be broadcast over the television in North Korea. And if that's the case, then, of course, many, many more people than just the government party hacks are going to have the opportunity to see this amazing ensemble make music. And that really is a critical thing. I'm sure that Zarin, being the extremely smart person that he is, has gone to great lengths to make sure that the New York Phil isn't just going to go there to play for, you know, the government hacks, but would hopefully have this concert would hopefully be available to the average North Korean person.
Right. Bill Edens is joining us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio. Chuck Downs, let me come back to you. The op-ed piece you wrote in the Times back in October recommended broadcast on state radio, also recommended Western journalists coming, and that the hall should be open, as Bill was just talking about, to, you know, the common folk. It seems like on at least two of those three, the Philharmonic has done pretty much what you had suggested.
I haven't read anything out of North Korea that suggests that they think they've agreed to these terms, but there does seem to be talk on this side of the table that those terms have been accepted by North Korea, and I hope that's right. I hope that everyone actually gets to hear the music and doesn't just get to turn on their single state-supplied station that they have to watch all of the time and see people shaking hands, meeting at the airport, and the huge logistical maneuver that will occur to try to get the Philharmonic into Pyongyang.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that the regime will focus on that, the glad-handing, the kind of tribute that this appears to be, and that's what will be broadcast to the people in North Korea.
Well, now, let me ask you, I mean, the peninsula is a relatively small geographic area, and the Munhwa Broadcasting Company in South Korea, will be broadcasting this. How much access do the North Koreans have, whether legal or otherwise, to broadcasts from south of the DMZ?
Well, there are agencies like Free North Korea Radio that will try to broadcast as much as possible. Munhwa is not received in North Korea, and certainly not legally received. You've got to realize that even as the New York Philharmonic's team was in Pyongyang last October, 150,000 people were called together in a stadium to witness the execution of a man who had used cell phones to call the outside world. North Korea is extremely repressed. This public execution was forced on 150,000 people in a stadium, and that was just this past October, over a month ago.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Chuck Downs, a former Pentagon expert on North Korea and author of the book Over the Line, North Korea's Negotiating Strategy, and William Edens, the pianist, conductor of the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra. Bill, what do you make of, the programming plans and realistically how much, you know, could this concert inject a little Western culture into the what is, after all, one of the most repressive states in the world?
Well, I love the programming plans. It was obvious to me from pretty much moment one that Zarin and the New York Phil, and of course their maestro, would pick a classic piece of American music to bring into this situation. And American in Paris is about as classic as you can get. And of course, the New World Symphony. It means something to us musicians, because here you have the mixture of the old world and, of course, over here in the new world. And so as a programming thing, it's a wonderful combination of music. I don't think that in itself as a concert, it's going to make that much of a difference culturally to the North Koreans. And I think anyone who would think otherwise would probably be a little bit naive. My hope here is that there are going to be those people who have been subjugated to this propaganda from the North Korean machine who, when faced with this fabulous orchestra and this wonderful music, start to think differently. Mm-hmm. Whether that is going to have an immediate impact on the North Korean government, I personally doubt it. But if we do not make these reaches out to people, I mean, as Zarin said, if we do not engage people, nothing will change. And art, especially music, is one of the best ways of doing this.
All right. And I'm sure Zarin and Lauren Mizell and the rest of the people making those programming decisions were being incredibly careful. There have been instances in the past where governments have said, you know, we don't like this or that piece. There are pieces that of music that have a kind of overtone to them, pieces about freedom and democracy, and you know, Beethoven's overture to Fidelio, a good example, something that I'm sure you would quickly have knocked off the list of possibilities for the New York Phil to bring to North Korea. Here's a little bit in a recording by that orchestra with Leonard Bernstein. Beethoven's Overture to Fidelio. As I say, this is something you would not hear in North Korea, but you might hear one of the many songs written in tribute to their leader, Kim Jong-il, like this one, No Motherland Without You. But you won't be hearing that on the New York Philharmonic program, I'm sure. No Motherland Without You. The lyrics list Kim Jong-il's superhuman powers in leading and protecting the great state of North Korea. Joining us now on the phone is Neil Courtney. Neil is a double bassist in the Philadelphia Orchestra. He was with the orchestra for its 1973 tour of Communist China, historic event, first ever by an American orchestra. And in fact, the Philadelphia Orchestra will be returning to China next June to recreate its original concert program. Neil, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
So we were just hearing Beethoven. Your orchestra actually chose to play some Beethoven of its own when that 1973 tour was put together. Tell us what happened.
Well, I'm not sure which Beethoven it was. I think it was the Beethoven Fifth Symphony.
Right.
And when we arrived, the management was told that was all very well, but Madame Mao would prefer that we played Beethoven's Sixth Symphony.
Just like that.
Pardon me?
Just like that. Don't play the Fifth.
Yeah,
play the Sixth.
We would prefer that. Well, we didn't have the music with us, and they said, it doesn't matter, we'll find the music. And they said that they felt, since there were going to be a number of workers coming to the concert, her concern was that the Fifth Symphony was too abstract, and the Sixth Symphony, with its bird calls and its peasant dances and its storm scene, would respond. It would communicate more to their workers.
Do you recall thinking that? I mean, I'm sure you know the rank and file musicians weren't privy to everything that was going on. But did you get the impression that this was a kind of a nice request, or was this a command?
No, it was a command, but it was put very nicely.
Okay. What was the...
What they did was remove all obstacles. They said, we don't have the music. Well, we'll get the music. And they flew Chinese Air Force planes to Shanghai to get parts, to bring parts back.
All right.
And I don't know if you can cook those things up overnight or not, but...
Well, this is 1973, you know, Cold War. What was the purpose of the orchestra's trip?
Well, I think it was a little different from the trip to North Korea. because the Cultural Revolution was really winding down, and it was pretty much a managed thing which had gotten out of control. I mean, managed by Mao, and it had gotten out of control, and they had decided it was time to bring more order to the country. And part of trying to stabilize things, I think, was what led to the ping-pong diplomacy, that it was now time for China to open up.
Mm-hmm. So this was, in fact, seen as an element in the opening up of this communist country to the West.
Right.
And, you know, that's something that Chuck and Bill, we've been going back and forth with, you know, with Zarin first and with you guys later on today. I mean, can that, you know, can we see the New York Philharmonic's trip to Pyongyang, Chuck, as not a public relations coup for Kim Jong-il, but as some kind of, however small, some kind of evidence that there is a crack in the wall around North Korea?
The Western tradition is so rich, and I love the fact that you brought up the Fidelio Overture, and apparently Mr. Maeda's looking for an overture to add to the program, and Fidelio would be superb. You've got false imprisonment, you've got challenge of a government, you've got family separation.
And so it'll never happen.
and I'm afraid it probably never will happen. But what a great thing to suggest to the North Koreans, to see if they're listening to NPR and if they actually have a good intention regarding this. It's fascinating to think that someone, even a functionary, might sit in the audience and hear that music and know what's going on and actually perceive everything about his own society and the limits of it. And it's, you know, it seems a flight of fancy, perhaps, but you never know how these things integrate into a society and the changes they lead to. So I'm all for what the intentions of the New York Philharmonic are. It's the intentions of the State Department that are troubling.
What do you think the State Department's intention here is?
The State Department's intention is a confusion about who gets what in a negotiation. And I think that Ambassador Hill believes that he is giving something to North Korea, but I think that North Korea firmly believes they are giving something to him. And I think that they think that they are getting the U.S. State Department and Ambassador Hill and the Bush administration to comment in the most superlative terms about this new openness. And they love having us talk about their openness when they are not at all open, when they're still executing people in public for using a cell phone, arresting people for humming a South Korean folk song.
So the State Department thinks it's giving something to North Korea and will maybe get something in return, and North Korea feels exactly the opposite, that they are giving something to the State Department, therefore owe them nothing. Is that the problem as you see it?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Bill, let me come back to you, Bill Eden's Edmonton Symphony Orchestra. You know, Neil is telling us the story of, you know, the orchestra gets to China, they land, they're ready to play the Fifth Symphony, and then they are requested to instead play the Sixth Symphony. You know, it's a pretty, I mean, well, how would you handle that sort of thing? What lesson can we take from that?
Well, I too would look to see if we had the music, first of all. That's the most important thing. You know, I find it rather funny that, of course, the great madam would know the difference between the Fifth and the Sixth Symphonies.
But she was
Beethoven,
a very sophisticated and cultured woman, remember, you know?
Very cultured woman, and that says something about what was going on in China at that time. And it's also funny that this overture to Fidelio has come up, because if I remember the story correctly, Fidelio was a disaster at its premiere, partly because Napoleon had invaded Vienna just a couple of weeks beforehand, and suddenly you had this story about false imprisonment and throwing off the shackles of the people who are lording over you, and all the people in the audience at that time were, of course, members of the French establishment, part of the French army. So that didn't go over very well with them either. So, yeah, you have to be very careful sometimes when you pick music for situations like this. But, you know,
well, and it also just kind of shows that, you know, if music and politics seem like strange bedfellows, they've been in bed together for centuries on and off. And
for many, many years. And, you know, the other thing that we have to realize is as much as we can speculate over here, do we really know what the North Koreans are thinking?
Right.
I mean, yes, this is probably the most closed society on the face of the planet. And we are just not sure about the machinations that go on in the government. This is not like Kremlinology, where you could kind of tell who was in power by who was standing next to the Soviet premier
right.
at the May Day parades.
Bill,
we don't have anything to go with.
We're going to need to leave it there. William Edens is conductor of the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra and author of the blog Sticks and Drones. And we've also been speaking with Neil Courtney, double bassist of the Philadelphia Orchestra, went to China with the orchestra on their historic tour in 73, and Chuck Downs, former Pentagon expert on North Korea and board member of the U.S. Committee for Human Rights in North Korea. Gentlemen, to the three of you, thank you very much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
My pleasure.
And a little more from the Fidelio Overture by Beethoven, very much of the moment in our discussion today. This is Soundcheck.